the meeting to order. Do away with the roll calls. Agenda review, anybody look at what we're going to be discussing? Any public comments?
I have the agenda. Is anybody from the public here? Seeing no members of the public. But we do have a copy of the agenda in front of you as well. We do have stuff up on the screen. Sometimes it's easier to look at things up here. But essentially, we only have one agenda. Well, we have a couple agenda items. One is to approve the minutes from the previous two meetings. We didn't have a quorum last time. So we have five people here, which is only half of our 10 members.
That's
one more person will come. So I'm going to suggest that we go ahead with the other items and then maybe someone else.
So I
Oh, we have six.
We have six.
Yes.
Oh.
Including the chair.
Yeah.
So I think we're good.
I count.
Yeah. Okay.
Can you mean something?
I knew we had polled to make sure we had enough people this time. So maybe we could do that first, really quickly.
Minutes are here, right?
Yeah, so we had 2 minutes that needed to be approved. One was from the May meeting. And I didn't get a copy. Joanne, I didn't get it.
We want
a copy
of John's.
So there are minutes from the May 25th meeting. That's the meeting when we went out and did the walk on signs. So there weren't a whole lot of minutes for that, but and we distributed those at your last meeting, which was the June meeting, but we did not approve them because we didn't have a quorum. So
take a minute to look at them and then we'll see. Make a motion to approve both minutes. Both of them.
I approve the minutes.
So the minutes from the May 25th meeting, is there a vote to approve?
I vote to approve.
Second.
I second.
Oh. Yeah.
Oh, God, since I was there.
Motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. June 22nd, same thing.
June 22nd minutes? Yeah, it was a light turnout.
Okay.
So anytime people miss the meeting, we always encourage them to review the audio minutes, which are always posted on the website. They were just posted a few days ago, so I encourage you to listen to those. There weren't a lot from that meeting, though, because we were out in the field that time, also looking at streetscape design standards.
For the second minute, who first and who seconded it?
We did not say for the second one.
I think
one.
I pushed it through. That's what I did.
Okay.
We need to just put it in the minutes. Who?
Yeah. Okay, just push through. Okay.
Well.
Okay, minutes are approved. No public comment. So next item, downtown design standards, downtown sign code amendments. So at the last meeting, we provided you with summary of the comments that we received at the previous meeting. And that was the walk that we went on in the downtown. We also had received some written comments. And we distributed copies of those to you. There were written comments submitted from Philip Farrington on June 22nd. And there was a subsequent email submitted by Eric Adams, who's a committee member, on June 5th. And so I included copies of those in your packet tonight to make sure that everyone received those, especially those that weren't here at the last meeting. And So I was hoping to just spend just a few minutes recapping what some of the issues were that the committee talked about. And then we can get into the proposed draft language. So do you remember this? We looked at types of signs, wall signs, freestanding or pole signs, projecting signs, remember some of those signs that stuck out over the sidewalk, marquee, under marquee, roof signs. David, oh, I forgot to introduce our guest. David Bowlesby, introduce yourself, please. This is the Downtown Citizen Advisory Committee. A lot of you know David already.
Yeah, I'm David Bowlesby. I'm the city's building official. I'm also kind of look over and guide the sign code for the city of Springfield. I do most of the reviews, and if there's any interpretations or changes, any presentations that need to go to council, I get to be involved in that also. So I've been doing that for a few years.
And then we also have Christina Schmuck-Kraz.
Yeah.
I always pronounce her name wrong. Is that correct?
Kraz.
Kraz. She's our city attorney.
Assistant city attorney.
She's amazing, I'm just gonna say it right out, and she is working with us on the code language, not just for the sign code, but for the downtown design standards that you will be reviewing at your next meeting. So I asked Christina to come because she's really our expert in the legal aspects of sign codes, and all codes, but especially the sign codes she's been working on. So she's gonna walk you through the proposed language and answer any questions you might have about why certain provisions are being added or not. So thank you, Christina, for being here. So we looked at sizes of signs. We looked at how they're mounted on a building or a site. These are summaries of the comments that we heard during the walk. This was all provided to the committee at the last meeting. We looked at how signs are placed on windows. We measured heights with the measuring tape. We looked at mounting height. We considered what pedestrian-oriented signs really would need to be for a pedestrian walking down the street to be able to clearly see the sign and read it. We even looked at lettering sizes, as you recall. So those of you that weren't there, it was a good meeting, I thought. That was really helpful to get out in the field and look at that. So the bullet points are things that people wrote in their forms as we were walking around. Appropriate range of size for lettering. I think we came up with 18 inches as kind of the max for being a pedestrian oriented sign lettering size. We talked somewhat about illumination. I know there were some previous comments about internally lit versus externally lit signs. So maybe that's something that David or Christina can speak to, because I don't think we're addressing that in the draft. We talked about the need for variety and encouraging creativity. But the committee also thought that consistency and placement of signs, even though they're diverse and inspired, that some consistency of placement would be helpful. And I think that's consistent with the council direction on some of the other design standards in the streetscape. Windows, some of the thoughts were about retaining transparency so that the sign doesn't completely block the window, and that's something that is addressed in the proposed language that you'll be reviewing. We did not address the size of signs a whole lot other than the blade signs, so we'll talk about that, and freestanding signs. So the blade signs were those signs that a lot of the committee members really like, that are usually mounted on some type of an ornamental bracket, not always, but sometimes. And there was a lot of support for having more of that type of signage in the downtown. So we are definitely addressing that in the proposed code. Permanent material, we heard from the committee, you'd like to see the code require permanent materials, but I think that's something that David maybe can address as the citywide sign code standard.
There's already provisions in the sign code that says that the materials that the signs are constructed of have to be otherwise approved by the building code. And that has to do with their proximity to the regulated structure. So we don't want to have a required control over types of building materials on a structure and then something unregulated attached to it, something that may be more dangerous by code language, more flammable, less protected, things like that. And so those two go hand in hand.
It seems like a blade sign, like vertical hanging sign, the hardware would be a material that would be substantial, but the actual sign itself, could that be just about?
Well, you can look at what is allowed by the code, and when people start talking about signs, especially handmade or homemade signs, that's where we start getting into people using cardboard or some kind of artistic combination of paper mache, which has actually been done before, and didn't last very long. And different materials that you wouldn't expect that would be an approved building material, but approved building materials is wood, metal, stone, virtually anything. The goal is to make sure that it's protected from environmental impact. You don't want the sign becoming a hazard falling on somebody because it's deteriorated because of rain or wind or something like that. So it looks at the building code for safety for the type of material.
Some other things people spoke about were professional design and manufacturing. There was one comment that A-frame signboards look cheap or handwritten things. So is that something that we can actually regulate?
I think you can regulate the type of sign, so you could theoretically prohibit A-frame signboards. I think it gets tricky when we talk about handwriting versus non-handwriting. There is strong Oregon case law and federal case law under the First Amendment, and then Oregon also has a free expression clause that if you have to read a sign and look at its content to know whether or not you can enforce your standard, then it's unconstitutional. And so I think prohibiting handwriting is maybe in a little bit more of that gray area than other sign regulations might be. So regulating lettering height versus regulating the font style, if that makes sense.
I would also debate the professional design and manufacturing, simply because my master's degree, I was better at building my own sign than the people that I hired to do the sign. So I was the one that designed it, they're the ones that implemented it.
So you'll see we didn't include either of those things in the proposed code language. But I just didn't want to just race through it and not address it, because some committee members thought those were important things. Others?
Well, one of the things, just getting back to the, because I have a love-hate relationship with A-frame signs, and I've used them, and they're important, but when the code was changed to allow each business to have two of them, that's when I think it started getting, and that was only, maybe six?
That was in 2012, and the recommendation that I brought forward was one A-frame sign in two different districts of the city. And one of the council members and the mayor elected to go with two. I have zero dialogue as to why that decision was made, but it was their choice. Ultimately, the sign code is their code.
I can see the recommendation of one per door allowed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we tried to be consistent when I went through and wrote some of those provisions, looking at other areas, other towns and jurisdictions, and one seemed to be pretty common.
Well, especially depending on the width of you know, the storefront. And
there was,
so, but I remember when that was allowed, and I think it was, we were coming out of the recession, or a lot of people were still struggling, and it was just one of the things that, I mean, I appreciate what went behind it, because they just wanted businesses to have as much exposure as possible. But when, if you're driving down Main Street, it just, to me, it just kind of got out of hand a little bit. But and the reason I say I have a love hate with it is because I had a professional one done, and then I also had the second one, like if I was having a sale, and I would only put that out when I had a sale. But I had a corner, so I used, you know, but you know what I'm saying. It just, it's cluttery, so.
One of the things that came up, kind of an extension of that same discussion point, was that we can't regulate the content of the sign.
Right.
And this became kind of a sore point for some of the businesses on Main Street, and shortly after that rule was included in the sign code, is that businesses off of Main Street were getting permission from businesses on Main Street to advertise their businesses. And so the signs that were in the viewscape on Main, adjacent to the business on Main, weren't signs for those businesses.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have a tool to prevent that. So that can still continue.
Gets back to that First Amendment stuff.
Yeah. That's exactly
yeah.
what it is.
The issue with it is it's advertising the business. The situation is you have the blade sign in theory, you have the exterior sign in theory. Having one per entrance sounds acceptable for doing sales and events, if you had a blade sign. Having more than one kind of muddles it all up, in my opinion, because you only need one communication if you already have the advertisement, what your business name is or what it does.
Well, I think, you know, as the committee makes your recommendation tonight based on the draft language, you know, if you want to put something in there that you think the council might want to reconsider, the number of A-frame signs now or in the future, the committee could certainly add that to your...
You could also drop to downtown specific.
Mm-hmm.
So it could become, they may allow two all over town. It could be a recommendation for in downtown to allow one, or one per entrance, or one per street frontage. Or
it makes sense that there's one, just even that there's limited sidewalk space and for just mobility and moving around. And
they're also putting different spots, so it makes it even more chaotic.
Well, and also the cars are going slower, you know, less need to have more outside, perhaps. I mean, you know, on the sidewalk or
right.
pedestrian way.
One A-frame or one A-sign tells you the event, like there's a sale happening. That's fine, but if you start getting a couple, that's kind of getting convoluted.
Yeah.
For business, I'm talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So Karen had a business, two businesses on Main Street, and would you have liked it if it would have said only one? Since you had
yeah,
two?
I would have been fine with it. Well, because when I had the Washburn, it was still only one, and so I had my one. And but then when it changed, I got the second one for, you know, the sale, but I didn't have that out very often, and then I did a blackboard sign that I kind of kept inside the covered porch area, that usually just talked about local or Christmas or something. So, but, you know, there's, like I said, I used to drive in from East Springfield all the way down and just watch, you know, so, no, some people do it right, but in answer to your question, maybe it should go back to one. One's plenty, as long as you have your fixed sign and your window sign.
The idea of having it per entrance allows the idea if they have a side door, you know, that's, let's say, for example, at Plaketown, as if it had two entrances, one on one side, one on the other, allows you to have the A-frames on each side. and that would be comfortable compared to having two right next to each other.
So noted, thank you. So some of the other issues that were discussed about placement of signs close together or too large can be difficult to read. Don't think we addressed that in the draft code. I'm not sure how we would. David, do you want to speak to that?
Well, no, I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
I've not really tuned into my thought about is the group addressing those banner open signs that are stuck in the sidewalk as part of this downtown signage? Is that a component of what you're working on also? Because effectively each business downtown, because of the allowance of that, has the ability currently to have three signs out in the right of way. So I didn't know if you were talking about limiting that, pulling it back, or leaving that alone as a separate piece, not involved in this.
I totally forgot about those, and I use mine all the time, and a lot of people do, but it's, I think they're going to start, now that Vahana's here, I think she's going to start getting a little more aggressive, and with asking, because the businesses can do it or not do it, and they have to pay a portion, and the city pays for the pole. But that was to create some consistency, yet with the individuality of each business, you could choose your colors and your font and all that. So, but that, I think that was in addition to the specific A-frames.
Yeah, because those are not actually in the sign code.
Right, because I think that was more, it was an economic development perk.
So I think technically they fall under the realm of government signs because the city sponsors them,
okay.
And so they're covered under the sign code only to the extent that they're specifically exempted.
It's quite a healthy
okay.
Just, and the reason that comes up in my mind, I see these different scenarios play out from talking to different business owners and citizens about how this could potentially perceived, and I can see that some people want to maintain their two freestanding signs. Other people want one. But if you're a business that has one of those flags and a freestanding, you have two. Or maybe I don't have the flag, but I still want two. So there's, I don't know where you would work with Vahana's approach on this.
That never came up because, like you said, that was a part of government, you know, as opposed to private. So, well, it really wasn't a handout because you had to pay for the banner. It was a city program.
Thing.
Yeah, public relations. So, I don't know. I mean, it makes good sense.
I can just see that the way that the sign code is designed is kind of an option, either or's kind of thing, is that you could have two sandwich boards, or if you have one of those flag signs, you could only have one sandwich board.
So
that kind of a thing. So I don't know if that had ever come into play.
No, I think that was totally separate. They were treating the banner signs as something different. I don't know.
So you had a marquee sign, and you had a sign in the window, and you had an A-frame, that would be three.
Yeah.
And that would be your limit.
No.
But
that's
you
not
have up to, but the fourth, the blade.
The little flag
flag
on the sidewalk.
Is exempt, so that's.
So the A-frame sign is also exempt, it doesn't count towards your limit. And then under the current code, something that's inside a window is also not counted. So you would only have one sign. Depending on how the sign is affixed to the window under the current way that we've addressed signs on windows. If something is on the window in terms of it's painted from the inside, then that is not a sign. But if it's affixed to the outside of the window, then under the current code, that would be considered a sign. So we have some, we'll get to that point later, but we need to do an overall sign code update in order to address some constitutional issues that are in the general sign code. and it's part of that project, and then for downtown specifically, looking at being more consistent in how we treat window signs so that there's not potentially a loophole between, I can, if I paint something on the outside of my window, I it's now become a sign, and if it's right inside, then it's not. So thinking about how you want to address that, I think will come up too.
Can we jump forward just to, so some of the other issues that we talked about in the field were the potential for limiting projection from the wall for those signs that were over the sidewalk. There was some, I think it was Eric submitted the information about the empty signs that are out there that are abandoned. So we are addressing that, I believe, in the proposed code that you're going to see tonight. There was a lot of information about that, and that was one of the themes when we were doing the walk of the old signs that were left over in the non-conforming that seemed to be really detracting from the appearance of the downtown. So we have tried to address that, and Christina can fill you in about what we think is reasonable for that.
What, because when a building or a business changes and they have those existing signs, they usually use them because they've been grandfathered in, right? That's the way it's been, right?
Yep.
So,
as long as the sign was left in place.
So we'll talk about the changes to that section.
Yeah. So any questions? Does that trigger your memory about the walk we did and the input that you guys provided to date? So I'm going to ask Christina to walk us through the sign code draft. So we have it on the screen. We also have it in front of you, depending on which glasses you brought or didn't bring tonight.
Just scroll. It's not in legislative format, so I'll just point out the things that are new and the things that have been there the whole time. So, and then Linda has the commentary on why the amendments are being added and what former feedback you've given that informed the sort of the substantive content of it. One of the first things is to add a definition for a blade sign. And so the code currently has two types of signs that are its current definitions for signs that can be attached to walls. And those are called wall signs or projecting signs. And whether a sign is a wall sign or projecting sign has to do with how far out the outermost edge is from the wall. So if it's less than 12 inches, it's regulated as a wall sign in most places. And if it's more than 12, it's a projecting sign. But because with a blade sign, you could have a long, narrow, or skinny and tall, there's a potential that it could be either a wall sign or a projecting sign, so we just added a definition for a blade sign that makes it clear what that is and provides some guidelines on how much area they can be. So different proportions, different configurations for how you can achieve that proposed 9 square feet. And then it has to be mounted at a 90 degree angle. And then we've included language that may or may not be mounted, and I think that may be a typo, mounted or hung from an ornamental metal bracket sign structure. That language is put in there to direct people that would be an option, but it's not put in there at this point as enforceable language that it must be hung from an ornamental metal bracket. Part of the reason it's not written as a really enforceable, we can go out and require this, is that ornamental is potentially discretionary. It would require David to use his opinion on whether something's ornamental or not. With the sign code, we kept it in the building section of our municipal code, as opposed to our land development code, the Springfield Development Code. And the reason for that is that the building standards are designed to be clear and objective and not require any land use decision making and how to implement them. And if we had something in the municipal codes building section that involved a lot of discretion or design review, then that could elevate any decision on a sign permit up to a land use decision, which would require a lot of process and appeal on the part of potentially other potentially from other businesses nearby could appeal a sign that they don't like on your business, or there could be a lot of just process that we have to afford people in reviewing these, where if we keep it just clear-cut standards, we don't have to do that.
I think the thing is good to point out about the blade sign definition is the one less than 1 inch thickness. So a lot of the projecting signs that you see that are more what we call the box signs, they tend to be, you know, 4-6 inches thick. So this does capture what those smaller blade signs that we see in the downtown. More like the hang a shingle type sign.
I'd remove ornamental, it's always interpreted.
Well, it may or may not be, so it's pointing people towards that possibility, but not requiring it. So somebody could come in with something that was meet that definition and is mounted, not even using anything metal, and under that it would. So you could change it to must be mounted from a metal bracket if you wanted that to be enforceable and remove the ornamental, or you could leave it in there as sort of a suggestion. That's your decision.
Anybody have a comment on that?
Yeah, the ornamental, that's some gray area there. It's mounted or hung from a metal sign bracket.
Well, the intent with the language the way it is, it's not a requirement, but it plants a seed.
It's like saying,
you see the word ornamental. It's not telling you you have to, but you see that word ornamental, people more likely than not inclined to think, in my opinion, that that may be a requirement, when that's not what actually what it says. We can't make it a requirement, but we plan that's all that word is
to encourage it.
Yeah. It's like saying well designed or something like that. I mean, yeah. It does put a picture
well,
in your mind,
right.
Ornamental versus just.
You're right, because it is say may or may not.
It says may or may not. It's the may or may not in there. So it's as drafted, it's a recommendation, sort of. But if you want that to be, if you want to see these things mounted from metal brackets, then we can adjust that definition.
It's like not saying
that's what this
you may or may
for.
Not wash your windows, but now they're thinking, well, I should wash my windows.
The current building codes and all of the different building codes in the state of Oregon have language throughout that talks about in a craftsmanship-like manner. What does that mean? It plants a seed, and that's what it is. So that being in there is actually consistent with the other codes that were already in place in Springfield.
Makes sense.
But also, if there's one that is if not mounted underneath an awning, exposed to the weather, that would have to be some kind of metal anyway.
Not necessarily. There's a variety of materials that are impervious to the weather and the elements. Different kinds of wood, different kinds of synthetic materials also.
Okay, yeah.
So,
but I was thinking wood's going to deteriorate at some point.
And for the most part, yes, common building materials for wood that's enclosed. But in the building codes, they talk about materials that are otherwise impervious to weather or decay or animals. And they talk about cypress, walnut, couple other types of wood that are virtually the wood equivalent of iron. Yeah, so those don't have to be treated at all, and they last forever. And we do have some signs around town that are made out of these different types of wood that are untreated and just impervious to weather. So, and again, that ties in the language in the sign code and for this as to those types of materials that are otherwise permitted by the building code. So it looks at whether or not the sign's going to deteriorate just because of what it's made out of. So that language is already in there, it's tied in.
I almost hate to bring this up, it's getting a little detail-y. Where did the 90 degrees come from? In other words, a blade sign could also be pointed with, you know, facing two directions, but not a single blade. It could be a wedge, say, without a top. I mean, it's another design thing, I'm sure, but is a blade strictly a one-piece suspended or supported otherwise? A structure, or can it be of different shapes?
I think that the 1 inch, if you go with this definition, the 1 inch thickness would probably prevent anything.
Yeah, but
that
that's
was
still a single piece. You could have two half inch things coming. I'm not, this is getting picky, but maybe this is a time I should bring it up.
Yeah, no,
that
I think
be a projecting.
I think under that case, that would probably be a protecting sign, because I think the thickness would look at not the thickness of the actual material, but the thickness of the dimensional.
The total assembly, whether.
Yeah, I think that's how you would have.
Yeah.
That's why it's called double-faced double-wall sign.
Yeah, an example would be like what we currently do with billboards. Currently with billboards, you have a standard billboard face like this, and then the language actually allows a V, and the V is for those roadways that are bypassing, and this is still the thickness. It's not from here to here. Yeah, it's still would be the thickness. So it's just that.
Well, structurally, it still has to work whether it's an inch or half an inch. So it depends on how big it is and how thick it is. I mean, it's not just an inch isn't always a magic number. Maybe you're saying it's a maximum, so.
So let's maybe let's jump down to how this definition gets plugged into the code, and then we could continue that discussion because
okay.
that might.
No,
inform.
That's fine. I just want. I don't. Yeah, may not be.
I just think it might give you a better idea of if you want to change it or leave it as is. So then. Real quick, what we've done is added a requirement for pedestrian-oriented signs. So that comes in two ways. The first is just in this draft, and you should give feedback on this if you want to see it changed. Keeping the limitation for three signs that currently exists, but then not counting the one required pedestrian-oriented sign that is described in the next section. So essentially, no one would be required to convert. If somebody is using all of their allowed signs currently, they would be required to remove something in order to put up a pedestrian-oriented sign. It would be an additional sign on top of that, as drafted. And then the language for required pedestrian-oriented signs. When I say required, we can't go out and tell people you have to go tomorrow put this sign up. What we can do is say, you can't come in for a new sign permit. We can't award you any new sign permits unless one of those signs meets this requirement. So it's not if you weren't planning on doing anything with your signs, you wouldn't need to come into compliance with this right away. But in the future, if you come in for another sign permit purpose, you would need to provide one of these pedestrian-oriented signs. And then those have been drafted as a blade sign, referencing back to that definition, with a lettering size that's not greater than 12 inches tall, or you could provide a sign that is the same overall dimension as the blade sign definition, which is 9 square feet, and that could be, instead of a blade sign that's oriented this way, it could be placed on an entry door, storefront, window, wall, or building column that is visible from the sidewalk. And having a lettering size no more than 18 inches tall and installed in that pedestrian viewing area from 4 to 6 feet above sidewalk grade. And then there's a requirement that any sign that's placed on entry door glass or in a storefront window doesn't obstruct the view into the business from the abutting sidewalk. And the intent of that was to preserve your ability to see into a business. So you wouldn't cover if you had one window, you wouldn't cover that entire window with a sign. You'd still be able to see through there. But if there's other language or another way that you would want to implement that, that's another point I think to take feedback on. So then that's why, then this is where blade sign is used. So this provision and the definition of blade sign relate into each other.
So nobody has to have a blade sign, but you do have to have one pedestrian sign, and it could be a blade sign. And if you use those, they don't count towards your sign maximum. So it's kind of a bonus, an incentive to try to get people to do a pedestrian-oriented sign. Most people would do it anyway. They're going to have some kind of title on their door or their window.
I think it's over-assisting, which is good. I don't think anyone should be crazy enough to do more than three. So I think you guys are giving a lot of leniency, so it works.
To your question about other angles, I think under this, potentially under B, if you were going to place it within the 4 to 6 foot range, then you could accommodate other angles and have it be a pedestrian-oriented sign under B, even if it doesn't meet the strict definition.
Yeah, it could be curved for all that matters.
Yeah. If it meets all the building structural requirements,
mm-hmm.
then, yeah. and it meets the production requirements that we'll talk about below.
Would a, in lieu of the blade sign, an A-frame sign? I mean, are they interchangeable?
They would not, so an A-frame sign would not meet the required pedestrian-oriented signs as drafted, because it would be, it's not a blade sign, and it wouldn't be mounted 4 to 6 feet high above grade. So it's, the intent is provide a blade sign, and then that could be theoretically anywhere on the building, but it's this type, and then, or one of these other signs, but it's specifically only located in that zone. There are no more comments on that part or discussion. The wall signs, this is number two. This is currently what's in the downtown district for wall signs. We've not made any changes to this language. So each business is currently allowed 3 square feet per lineal foot of building wall on a first, for a business that occupies the first floor. And the business is very broad. So you could have essentially any tenant would be considered a business. So you don't actually have to be making money. You could be theoretically even a residential, in downtown where we have mixed use, you could be a residential occupant if you're on the first or second floor. We couldn't regulate you differently, a residential tenant than a commercial tenant. And then on the second story, it's 1.5 square foot per lineal foot of building wall.
So no proposal to change the existing code, and we, to my knowledge, didn't bring up this issue in our review, so we left it as is.
There's really not a lot of them. The only one I can think of just right off the bat on Main Street is at Emerald Art Center, where they have the signs for the tenants upstairs on the wall, so that's kind of what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I mean, those are fine.
Technically, it could be quite a large sign, though. Mm-hmm.
I think technically it could be, just
I mean,
because
if you have 20 feet, which is not very much, that's 60 square feet, right? 20 times 3 square feet per lineal. I mean, that's, it's a 6 by 10 sign. That's quite a high percentage of the building facade.
That would, and that would be the total of all signs you could have.
I
so
see,
if you had that one
six,
if you had that 1 6 by 10 sign, then your business could only have
one
sign, except for the exemptions.
Yes.
The exempt signs, which are the A-frames, the banners on the sidewalk, and then window, potentially some window signs, as we'll get to later. So if you did have that, that would be the only thing that you could have. A business above you could have additional signs on the second story.
Yeah.
That seems,
Yeah, think of the fabric store that we stood, remember we stood in front of the fabric store and we said we really liked, a lot of the community members really liked the top for sign.
Oh.
And if you measure that and then the length, I mean, that's a pretty big sign, but the committee thought that was appropriate.
When I'm thinking of wall signs, I'm thinking of like on the sides, like on the columns. I wasn't really, so you're considering the top sign, that's considered a wall?
Is that a wall sign?
Yeah, so I can redo the.
Which sign you're speaking?
The fabric store, the top?
She has a big sign.
It's,
right, it's really well done.
I think
and
that
it's on the face of the building?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's
right
like
above the window.
Wall.
Yeah,
store
it's on the face of the building.
Oh.
Even if it's, yeah. Think of a building in terms of a plane, an edge of a structure, and that would be either glass or wood or stone. If it's a vertical flat face, that's a wall. That's wall sign, because we don't have a separate category currently for window signs. So
well, then
if it's on the exterior of the building currently, that's wall sign.
The code places a limitation that as long as it's on the exterior of the building and not projecting out more than 12 feet.
Okay.
So that is different than a projecting sign becomes something that is like the, for example, the MMA sign that was there. That would be projecting
right.
And not wall.
Okay. Oh, all right.
So that'll
so
get
on
dealt
even
with.
There's I had a wall sign. On the
yes,
east
that's
side.
A wall sign,
yes.
Right above your store.
Okay,
front.
I Right, forgot about that.
Any other comments before I move down to the next part? Okay, so then we move into a section that regulates, kind of in one section, freestanding, projecting, or roof signs. These signs also count, these signs plus wall signs count together towards those three limit. And then it's currently drafted in the code that each business is only allowed one freestanding sign, projecting sign, or roof sign. And then the standards are what are different. So currently, you could have one freestanding sign, and then that means you can only have two wall signs, or you can have three wall signs and no freestanding or projecting or roof signs.
Well, now what about on the corner?
Are you saying that's current code?
Yes, each building is permitted each building shall be permitted one freestanding sign, projecting sign, or roof sign, which shall be limited to a maximum area of 80 square feet for one face and 160 square feet for two or more faces. So that's the current code.
Yeah, the item 3 is in addition to the allowance for wall signs. It's in addition to.
The wall signs in the current code don't have a number, so it doesn't say 3 wall signs. It says the header for the whole thing says 3 signs total. So maybe it's not the way that it's been enforced, but.
Yeah, I don't know what you're looking at, because the current code does say that. It was the change that happened in 2012.
So each business in this district shall be limited to 3 signs. So that covers all of these signs, which currently are just wall signs.
But the corner is going to be different, because you have, and that's why I want to ask for more corners. Because you have two, you have an extra plan.
I think there's a break between the sign code language and the language that's in the code. And that's where that is, because each business downtown is allowed 3 wall signs and one each of either roof projecting or freestanding.
Okay, so there may be a discrepancy. We'll look into that.
That category of freestanding, projecting, or roof sign is not intended to take away from the allowance of wall signs.
But my question is, does that change for a corner building?
No.
Really?
Correct, no. So you, by business, one freestanding, projecting, or roof sign. But you could have wall signs on the other side of the business. That's what's in the current code.
Okay, that's what's confusing.
The intent of this number 3 is to get at, when we were in the field, we looked at those large pole signs that currently are allowed to be 20 feet tall, and the subcommittee felt that we should limit the size of those or do away with them altogether. So this is what we came up with as a proposed strategy for the downtown area.
So I'll walk through A and B then, if that's okay. So under A, roof signs and projecting signs. So roof signs are signs that are above the roof line, I think, correct?
At least a foot above.
Okay.
Roof sign is a minimum a foot above. If it's no more than a foot above parapet or the edge of a roof, then that's a wall sign.
Okay. So like the White Stag sign in Portland would be a roof sign. And then projecting signs, again, are those that are mounted to the wall, but project from the 12 inches. So they're limited to a maximum area of 80 square feet for one face or 160 square feet for two or more faces. So that just is how, that's the code's sort of standard convention for if you can see a sign from both sides, you don't have to make it half the size as if you've only put sign copy on one of those sides, if that makes sense. And those are the dimensions that are currently in the code for roof signs, projecting signs, and freestanding signs. So what we've done is we've proposed changes to the area limitations for freestanding signs. And freestanding signs are those signs that are not attached to the building, they're on their own structure. So then in B, the general downtown standard as proposed would become a 24 square foot area per sign face for all types of freestanding signs. And then freestanding signs that are mounted on a pole or post would have to occupy the space between 8 feet above clearance so that people can get under them, but not be more than 12 foot tall. So if you're thinking about in that area, it would max you out at 4 by 6.
So, clarification from, a freestanding sign is allowed on Main Street beside, I mean, it's another piece of the, it's another element that can, that is in the right of way of the sidewalk between, on the sidewalk between the curb and the face of the building, freestanding, right?
So currently, they are allowed there.
Will they be allowed in the future on Main Street?
So there's a exemption that's drafted for you to consider tonight to prohibit any freestanding signs along Main Street from Mill to 8th. So that's this, so there's two exceptions.
Yeah,
so
okay,
the size limitations up here would be what apply if there's no exception in sub 1 and sub 2. So there would be no freestanding signs between Mill and 8th on Main. And then...
except for those that are grandfathered in already?
Yeah, and we'll talk about that. Yeah, the city couldn't go out and just start taking down people's existing signs without...
Well, okay, can I interrupt? I'm sorry. Because I know there is something out there already. That's why I guess I'm thinking back to our little walk. Mm-hmm. So, if there's a change of ownership or use, occupancy of a building, can all this be eradicated if it doesn't work with the intentions of the new sign code?
Yeah.
I mean, like that sign that may be out there on Main Street, can it come go away if a new business moves in there, no matter if the new occupant wants it or not?
So we can't, I don't think that we can regulate it based on a change only of business, but we can regulate it based on if you come in for a new sign permit. And so since
well, I'm being more broad than that. Sign permit, building permit. I mean, anything that may go through review of the planning staff.
That I haven't looked at whether or not we could tie the non-conforming sign elimination
well,
to a building.
Non-conforming, right.
Yeah.
It's a non-conforming issue that
right.
has a chance to be conforming by maybe going away.
Right.
Or changing somehow to the discretion of whoever.
Right.
You know, it's a way to clean up the sidewalk is what
we
I'm
have
trying
that,
to
do. So that's section, I've got that drafted as section, I think 7, at the very bottom. So we can jump down to that now or we can come back to
well,
it
no,
when we get
I,
there.
I'm just saying it's a great time. The non-conforming uses seem to go have a way of disappearing or having an avenue to make them disappear or discussion whether they it happens or not. And I'm just kind of raising that for a lot of stuff that's out there now that maybe can become different or improved with the improvement of a particular site, you know, a building or facade.
Do you want to jump down to that section now, or do you
no,
want to get
no,
to it?
No,
okay.
I'm
we'll
just,
get to it in
yeah,
just a
okay,
minute then. So if we're going forward,
right.
They would be prohibited between Mill and 8th, and then they would, so anything that's already there would become non-conforming, and we'll talk about how you want to treat those signs in a few minutes.
Why between those streets, between Mill and 8th?
Isn't that really our downtown area?
Yes.
No, but it...
The downtown plan district that we're looking at in the design standards starts at 8th, and then it goes to
Mill and 8th down here,
But,
different than the urban renewal district.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And different, and also different from the downtown sign district that's currently drawn, which I think
okay.
is another topic for your conversation tonight.
Yeah.
So you could think about those geographic boundaries in terms of the conversation that you have about what the district should look like. And give that feedback as
the
well.
The rationale for this change is that we're trying to, this is supposed to be a pedestrian-oriented district. That's what the code is about. And so the changes to the sign code are meant to provide pedestrian orientation of signs within that particular district. And Main Street is where you have a walkable pattern right now because you do have the buildings that are built out to the sidewalk that do have that quality. Other streets like Pioneer Parkway and South A, they're not there yet. They're still auto-oriented, and so I is intended to kind of help transition away from the highway-oriented signage to something that's more moderate in size and scale that is going to fit in better with the Main Street and the pedestrian quality. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
That's the intent of this draft language.
So to go back up to the main section, and if you're not on Main Street between Mill and 8th, you're not along South A or Pioneer Parkway East or West, then you would be limited to 24 square feet per sign face. And then all freestanding signs that are mounted on a post or pole, so this would be everywhere except Main Street where they're prohibited, would be between that 8 and 12 foot height. And then if they're freestanding monument signs, which are those that are ground mounted, would not, it's drafted that they wouldn't be taller than 5 feet so that people could see over the top of them. And then along Pioneer Parkway and South A, like Linda was saying, slightly larger signs since those are more auto-oriented areas. So that would be a 32 square foot sign. So in that 4 foot zone, that would be a 4x8 sign. And you wouldn't need to design your sign so it went from 8 to 12 feet. It just couldn't cross at those boundaries as drafted.
For clarification, are freestanding signs that are currently there they're on 7th and Main, one on each side, aren't there? And then across the street at the pump, do they have a freestanding sign on that
corner? They've got that tall.
So there are three right there, and then I don't know how many beyond that or something.
Mm-hmm. So you're talking about like the Bright Oaks Meat sign,
mm-hmm.
that's
yeah.
okay, and then the pumps, and then what's across the street back?
It was the insurance, Powell's insurance, but they have a freestanding sign.
Let's skip down to the non-conforming and then go back to Windows.
Yeah.
Another one was the locksmith, a relatively
so
new
those
sign.
Would become non-conforming, and that if someone in one of those businesses changed or something and they wanted to go in to do some new signs, then they may be required to remove.
So what we have proposed is that when a business has non-conforming signs and they submit an application, a new sign application, then they would be required to make those non-conforming signs conform. So they would be required to either lower that, lower the pole that they're on, in some cases potentially remove them altogether, or convert them to a wall sign. We've drafted for your consideration an exception that would allow the Development and Public Works Director to determine that a particular sign contributes to the character of downtown, and that would be a discretionary review process, and so we would need to make sure, city staff would just basically need to make sure that if that determination is made that we provide the right appeal rights, but that would be such a limited basis that I recommend that's not as much of an issue as making your whole sign code full of discretionary standards.
What this works with is a property rights issue. The idea is when someone buys the building, they own the pole and they own the building. So if they alter the pole's signage in any form that is not in its original intention, that's when you can say this: it does not conform anymore. It does not follow the grandfather clause of this. The idea is that if someone wanted to use the pole and use the box shell, that whatever it is, and they just want to change the name of the business on it, that still is, in my opinion, part of the property rights issue. They purchased the right for that to do it, but it looks exactly the same, just a different name on it, that kind of, or intention on it. But if they have now changed its shape, or want to change its shape, they want to change its height or something, that's altered the initial reason. That's a property issue.
Yeah. You can talk about whether a copy change or when that requires a sign.
Right, currently, the current code just calls it a face change. Mm-hmm. So if you have a cabinet or box sign, that sort of thing, that has interchangeable faces, or they're typically internally illuminated as the ones that have those types of signs. If all you're doing is changing the face of the sign, does not require a permit. Mm-hmm. If the sign, to be specific, I'll talk about, let's say the Bright Oak sign, the risen pillar of theirs. If a new business moved in there and they wanted to change the face under the current rules, they can just change the face of that sign. That doesn't require anything. If the cabinet was to come away from the pole, that's when it couldn't go back unless in its new configuration it meets the current code. And so if they had to do anything to it or move it for repairs even, if that cabinet came off of that pole, it couldn't go back up unless it met current code.
Exactly, if it's a property.
This is a different approach,
mm-hmm.
and this would be new to any of the codes that we have.
So the way that this approach is different than what currently governs downtown and the rest of the city is that in the rest of the city, if you have non-conforming signs on your property, but you're coming in for a sign permit on an unrelated sign, a different sign, then as long as you wouldn't be getting more signs than you're allowed to have, you would not be required to fix other signs for your business that are non-conforming. And the way this is drafted, because of the feedback that you wanted to accelerate that process, Bright Oaks couldn't come in for a new wall sign without addressing the non-conforming freestanding sign at the same time. So it's a little bit of a higher standard. And that is, if you want to get into the like the legal, whether that's constitutional or not, that I think that falls within the bounds of what is constitutional, because when a person purchases their property, they would have warning that the code is, you know, what it is. And the public process would allow people to come in, and also people who don't want to be subject to that in the future have the ability to provide public comment either to your committee or to the council. So that's one way that we could speed up the rate at which non-conforming signs go away, but you could also leave it with the general background, the general rule that applies to the whole city, which is really sign specific as opposed to business specific.
How do we feel about that? Do we want to see these go away, or do we want to be a little more flexible with the businesses?
I see legality issues in the idea that, let's say I buy Bright Oaks building and I buy the sign, and I like this, the pole as is, I like the shape it is, and to me that I own that. As long as I change the sign and stuff like that, changing it to whatever name I want, that's acceptable. But once I have decided that I don't want a square, I want a triangle, that's suddenly I altered that pole. That is not my pole anymore. If I decide to ask the city that I want to change that pole, that's a totally different advertisement suddenly. You're basically saying you're wanting to remove what you originally purchased to something that you want to change. And that's when the city would be involved, I feel.
I think that's a good fairness argument. Legally, both options are sound. I mean, I've done the research on that. I think both fall within what the city can do in terms of regulation of building and land use. But that's definitely like an equities concern, I think, for you guys to talk about, and how public perceives their property rights versus what a judge would rule in a lawsuit are oftentimes very different things.
Are these issues usually over the counter, something really simple? These sign?
Not sign issues. They're never simple.
Well, I realize, especially new signs.
If your business fails, it's because
retro
of
sign. that's what I thought I was talking about.
So just so I can clarify something in my mind, the way I'm reading that is if Bright Oaks is a great example. Top of Bright Oaks sign, 15 feet, okay, which is outside of what the proposed language would allow. It only allowed to be 12 feet. I'm a new business moving in. I want to put up a wall sign, but I can't put up a wall sign unless I make the freestanding sign comply with the current code.
The way this language is drafted, correct. Yes. So that would be different than what we currently do, and it would just apply downtown if that's the direction they wanted to move forward with.
So they'd have to remove the pole just before they could even open their business?
If they wanted to
alter
do a
the
new
size
wall sign.
Somehow. Yeah. Reduce the size of the cabinet, lower the height of the sign.
But as long as they change the name, and that's all they're doing, that's fine.
Depending on the type of sign it is.
On the current code, it is, but face change is not a part of this discussion. This discussion right here would be, before I could give them any other sign, they'd have to make that sign comply.
So Bob's Market comes in and he wants to change from Bright Oaks to Bob's Market on the side of the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And the sign on top says still Bright Oaks on the pole. That's, he can't change that to Bob's Market because he has to be regulated and all that.
If he's not doing anything, if changing it from Bright Oaks to Bob's Market and the way he's going to do that would not trigger the need for a sign permit, then there would be no need to address the non-conforming nature of the sign
okay.
at that time.
That makes sense.
But the way that this is different is that if he comes in and says, well, I'm going to change out Brighter Oaks to say Bob's Market, but I'm also want a new sign that says Bob's Market next to the door. He's gotta come in for that permit for that sign that says Bob's Market next to the door. In the rest of the city, and currently for downtown, that would not trigger a need to do anything to the pole sign that's not conforming, as long as he's within the total number of signs that he could have. This language would say you don't get those new signs that you want until you address all of the sign-related issues out
so
for your business.
So you can either stick with the old rules, or you can stick, or you can go to the new rules, which do you choose? Okay.
Essentially.
You can't do both.
Right. If we did not, if let's just say we struck this, the committee thinks, oh, we don't think this is appropriate. That means that those signs could continue indefinitely.
Let's go back up.
You know, unless the owner chooses that I'm going to take down that pole sign in front of Bright Oaks because I don't like it anymore, it's old or whatever. Those are going to be there for the next 20 years.
Otherwise, it would be two miles, I agree.
Yeah.
You either choose one or the other.
Damage makes those signs go away also. There's language in the code that if the sign is damaged and the cost of repairs exceeds 50% of the value of the sign, then it can only be replaced with a currently conforming sign. And we actually had five or six of those after the, after quite a few years of discussions about signs that don't meet current code. They've been backed into my trucks, hit my cars, just a variety of things. And those signs go away.
And the abandoned signs also would not, if a sign is determined to be abandoned, then you have to come in to do even a copy change. If it's been abandoned, you have to come back in for a sign, new sign permit. And so the current definition of abandoned is one that's not used in conjunction with a business for more than 60 days, I think, 90 days. With the general sign code update project that I'm working on, I have drafted, it's not been to council, council's not weighed in on it, it could change, but I've drafted to expand that to a sign that's not in use. So where a sign may not relate to a particular business, there's still a determination that could be made that a sign has been abandoned after 90 days. And so that could
can
be taking the
copy.
Can we
shorten off time?
Yeah, we could.
Can we get 30 days instead?
Yeah.
I encourage the 90 days thing because you got a 30-day notice. And then you have a lot of times 3 days to negotiate contract. And then they move in on day 61 after all that.
So that gives you, that gives a business.
That 90 days is allowing. 30 days is getting kind of aggressive for a new business to try to have a chance. But I feel like the safety issue with electrical and stuff, the 90 days is appropriate to do the, that you need to have a new, you need to come in and get approval. Because it is electrical issues or quality of the sign itself.
So do you have, I mean, there's a lot of good discussion. Do you have specific feedback that Linda and I can incorporate into the next draft forward? Do you like this approach? Do you want the citywide approach?
It's wonderful. No, you answered my concern. I should have jumped myself, but I think you just, you know, you defined it more clearly. I would, number one, I'd like to see the process as simply worded and simply to proceed as possible. I guess that's what I was trying to ask you about.
Yeah.
Whether it's a type one, two, or three, whatever type of review, or, you know, I mean, it gets a little muddled because all I'm trying to get at is having something that helps to clean up what's already there, that whether it's non-conforming or conforming.
The effective date is also something kind of too soon.
Well, the effective date would be the date of adoption of the code. So that would, that this is placeholder language. That would be whatever date council approves becomes the date, and that's the standard convention for our development code updates and building updates.
Thank you for explaining.
Okay, so then I want to go back up to another, I think probably the last main substantive issue where we've added something. So window signs are not currently regulated in terms of whether they're on a window or not. The way that it's enforced is that if it's outside the window, street side, then it's a sign. And if it's inside the window, it's not a sign. And so since visually those can be the same, depending on where you put up a piece of paper, I recommend addressing window signs as their own item. So this sort of beginning language is just put in there as a placeholder if there's a general city, I've drafted for council's discussion in January, a general citywide regulation on window signs that would be 20%. And so I've put this section in just as a placeholder that says, don't look at the general city window sign standard, this is downtown specific. So as drafted, window signs, which would be signs that are affixed to a window or directly, I don't remember the language that I used, but it's like affixed to or directly oriented and visible from. So you can't get around it by hanging something on a ceiling bracket 1 inch from the window. That would still be a window sign if it's functionally the same as something that's mounted to glass. That they can't exceed 10% of the gross glass area of a business without obtaining a sign permit. So then if you've exceeded 10% of your gross glass area, that then counts as a wall sign or under your wall sign limitation for area.
So a 4-foot by 8-foot panel, glass panel, which is the standard window pane, that means you couldn't have anything higher than 3 inches.
Well, you would do it by area, so you could, it would be 10% of that square footage, so 3.5 square feet. And this is, so that to give you an idea of where the 10% came from, this language is pulled largely from the International Municipal Lawyers Association's model sign code that's drafted for jurisdictions around the US and Canada primarily to use as a model. And they include 10% in their model for like an urban area.
So that gets back to your issue of when you open a business, you want to get something up right away, and mm-hmm. you'd be able to do this without any permit.
Yeah, 10% is too low, though, in my opinion. But that's okay. I mean, I've seen samples, and I mean, we're talking percentages. For me, 15% is more appropriate, because you're getting something more when people walk by. Or when I calculate what you're doing, it's still about 3-3.5 inches. So it's still 10. The idea of 15% for me.
3 inches by 4 feet. I don't know where the
percentage
of your square footage.
You're talking about.
Yeah, 4 feet by, you saw 32 feet, you're saying 3 feet, but you're still dealing the 3 inches.
I don't know where it's just not following it. So it's 15, or it's 10% of the gross glass area. So a 4x8 window would be 32 square feet. So 10% of that would be, your sign could be 3.5 square feet. So if you've got a 4-foot wide window, then that you could cover the whole bottom 9 inches of
signs. Thank you.
My undergrad is engineering, so I can't do math too.
I can't do it. Yeah. Obviously I was not in this one.
It's a good point. It's good to be thinking about that in terms of.
So we're good.
Would be
could that 10% be anywhere on that window? We're not saying high or above the,
right,
within a certain range where you're looking at it.
Correct.
The majority of the storefronts downtown have a lot of glass area, and so the 10% is still going to be a substantial size sign. And based on what I see that people bring in, most of the signs that are applied for are less than what would equal 10% of most of those storefronts.
So we're perfectly fine.
What about if they want to do like a, not really banners, but if you, like Econo Sales has had it on there where it'll say, or, well, at the Washburn it would say, you know, coffee, breakfast, lunch.
Right.
Does that fall into, and then if you have the name of the business up here, and then you have those, that
the
banner running across.
The area of copy is in the sign. Yeah, if you just had a colored block on the window, that's not sign. And
no,
so,
but if it says something.
Yeah, copy is a sign.
Yeah,
and
so that
yeah.
goes under the 10%.
Yeah, another one was Mezzaluna, because remember they had that
right.
band
yeah.
of
yeah.
writing.
Yeah.
So Mezzaluna.
Just take the words out of it. The words are what the sign is. The rest of it's not sign.
Anecdotally, I was at Mezzaluna Pizza about the time that I was drafting this and curious what, because they have a lot of flyers up. They have a lot of community events. It's anecdotal and not scientific, and I didn't have a tape measure, but they seemed to be less than 10% with what they had with their permanent and all the flyers that they had up inside. So it would apply to those, you know, flyers for what's going on at the theater, those would also fall under this 10%. And so it's not a prohibition on, and it's also not a prohibition on a very, very large, like Plank Towns. Say Plank Towns, large design is more than 10%.
Right.
It's not a prohibition on having that, it just means it counts as one of your wall signs under this draft.
So that's interesting what you say about the posters, because, you know, we talk about, is it, the word is fenestration, where you can see, you know, from the street all the way back, which is, you know, for a business owner, you want people to see into your store. But when some of the businesses have gotten so carried away with all the signage and posters, and, you know, there's lots of posters that come around, but some stores have, like, permanent signs that are scotch taped in their windows, normally on the inside. So is that considered, how do you, because that, to me, is an eyesore, a lot of them.
But it's a freedom of expression eyesore.
Right, so where does that?
So the way that the definition, and I didn't pull in the definition for window sign, which I should have, but the way that it's drafted, basically anything that is copy, or graphics or images, but basically that's not like a solid block, would be a sign. So it doesn't matter if it's a community flyer advertising Girl Scout cookies, or the restaurant menu, or a snowman cartoon at the holidays. Those would all fall under a window sign definition, and then enforcement of this would be on the same complaint-driven basis that general code enforcement is. So
that was my next question.
Yeah.
So,
David's not going to walk around downtown,
right,
and
you're
say
you're
not
doing that.
I think a good example would be like Erica's Market.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
in front of Erica's Market, it just has a lot of flyers and a lot of information about events and products and articles for sale, things like that. And they generally don't say no to anybody. They'll just say, "Oh, go ahead and put your," we'll put it in the window. And it's a lot. There's a lot there. Now, I have not measured that. I don't know if maybe when you look at the total area of window that they have, they may be within that 10%, because it's all pretty low. It doesn't reach high up the window. And so you
it
see this,
like
this visual field, it seems like an awful lot. But not taking into account the size of all of that glazing, is that actually more than 10%?
And right now, we're not regulating that.
And they generally don't have, I think what we might want to look at, though, is, again, Erica's is a good example. They have a lot of glazing on Main and on 6th and in the alley. And so is this meant to be 10% of the total glazing that they have, or
yeah,
is it per window?
So as written, that's a good point. As written, this would be for the entire building.
Because they have virtually nothing on 6th or in the alley, which means there's no way that could equal 10%.
So we could revise this to per frontage, too.
I think it should be per...
Per frontage.
Yeah.
So that would, instead of being gross glass area of the building or of the business, it would be gross glass area on the frontage. So that each frontage would be limited to 10%
right
on that street frontage.
Right. But, you know, and it's also a safety thing, too, because somebody had mentioned to me years ago, and I never had really thought about it, but it's like, you know, if you're in your building at night, like late at night working, and if, you know, people can't see inside, and there's something, you know, it's a safety and security issue. And, you know, I never really looked at it that way, because you figure you're locked in, but... if they can't see you, if there's a crime being committed, or even if you're not there and there's a crime being committed, somebody's robbing the place, you got all these signs and everything all over your windows, the police officers can't see in.
The reason why lighting used to always be turned on at stores at night was always a security issue for the pedestrian. The idea of having posters on the windows prevents that lighting, which also prevents that safety for the pedestrian. That's what it initially was back in the 1910s. So we can see that kind of balance. The 10% issue is not necessarily for the business inside as much as it is for the people on the outside too, in a weird sort of way.
You could also consider locational standards that window signs can only occupy a certain area or so much of a certain area. That those are all things that you could consider.
So we're gonna change it to per.
Per frontage.
Per frontage, that makes sense. So for the window signs, anything 10% or less does not count as one of, count towards a window, or count towards a sign.
Right, towards your wall sign.
Yeah.
So then the, so then it would be the differential from 10% and up.
Then it's.
Then that counts towards your wall sign area. So this also prevents you from putting, from somebody putting up a really beautiful all glass, brand new building, and then having like a 6x10 wall sign and an identical 6x10 over their window. Like they would just be one or the other.
So a window is a transparent material versus like glass block.
Correct. I don't have the definition of how I drafted window, but I'm going to make that note to be clear that.
Well, because a lot of storefronts, there's a lot of stores with green crosses on them that have storefronts, but they've been obscured with translucent materials, so you can't see through it to begin with.
We don't get to say anything about that. That's OLCC's rules.
Oh.
They're supposed to be obscured vision. You're not supposed to be able to see into it.
Well, yeah,
OLCC did that.
And in the glass design standards for new buildings that we're going to be talking about next meeting, we remember we have that transparency requirement, and so that's where we get at that.
Is there any language anywhere that says that you cannot cover any more than a certain amount of windows? 10% is allowed without a permit. Beyond 10%, I just need a sign, but I can still cover it.
It would fall, then it would fall under the window. So the way I drafted it was gross escalatory windows, that signs that exceed that 10% are wall signs that are subject to the wall sign limits. So in theory, if you have a small area and those wall sign dimensions would cover your whole window area, then it's possible that depending on what you do with your development code project, it's possible it could obstruct. If you have a development code requirement to maintain transparency, then that would apply, I think, as a development limitation that would supersede a sign code provision.
What about when windows are papered up almost permanently, like the small portion of the Royal Building to the left of that one, since day one, has been covered with paper, and
so it wouldn't fall under the sign code, but it might be a development code issue for your development code project.
Maybe. Oh, for a percentage of openings on a street front?
Well, for the, so a building like that that's already existing doesn't have to comply with the transparency.
Well, it's another thing that we're going to need to talk about, because we did also discuss a maintenance and appearance code. We took that to council. That was one of the things that was part of that package, and the council was pretty receptive to it, but they wanted us to do the design standards first and then to bring back the appearance stuff, which got at more of those temporary or not so temporary window covering.
But unless it has copy or graphics, you couldn't. It's the difference between plain brown paper and like wrapping paper, I think.
Wow.
Like you couldn't put up a design. A designed wrapping paper would probably fall under our broad definition of what a sign is, because it has a graphic on it. But a plain paper would not fall under the sign code.
And so it's okay for the windows to be paper indefinitely?
Under current codes.
It is.
Yes, there's nothing that we have enforcement-wise under a current code that would prevent that.
There's a lot of offices on the Melrose area too that do that. Not Melrose Street, I'm talking actually the Melrose building, where they cover up their windows too, so that would have to be led into that same discussion.
How long do you want to keep going on this? Never mind.
Well, we're almost through the draft.
Yeah, that.
And I think it would be really great to get, if there are changes the committee would like to see incorporated. Because I think if we brought this to another meeting, I think we need to keep finishing it if we can.
My kids at swim lessons, so I have all the time that Linda and the committee has. And then my husband will put her to bed if I'm home like really late. So.
And I know Tiffany really needs to leave, so.
But you have to.
Thank you, Tiffany.
We've been making comments as we've been going along.
Yeah.
I
as to propose changes to this.
Yeah, if you think of anything later on, just email.
Does that sound like good enough for you, committee? Want to make more?
No, what, you're saying the comments that we've been doing.
I'm saying, we're making comments and suggestions and improving this. Do you think there's any more that we want to put in?
I don't know, having gone through,
There's just one small provision we haven't gone through.
Oh, okay. Okay, so.
So that's.
It's 7 o'clock, I'm trying to.
Oh, yeah, do you want to go through the last part, or do you want to, because you're the chair?
No, let's just do the last part.
Okay, so the last change is there's already, a minimum clearance for signs that you can't come lower in the public right of way than 8 feet to provide that walking clearance. There's previously been a, limitation that signs, can't encroach within 2 feet of, you have to have a 2 foot clearance between the right of way, or curb line. But if a building is set really far back, then in theory you could have a projecting sign that comes 10 feet out if that's a 12 foot distance. So this just adds a 4 foot wall projection limit. So it would be 4 feet from the wall unless you're closer than 6 feet to that, curb or driveway line, and then you would have to make it as far, as close to the wall as to get that 2 feet in there. And that's the only other language we have in here. So we have a really wide sidewalk, you couldn't go all the way out to that 2 feet, you could only go out maximum of 4.
And the example we looked at was that MMA, former MMA sign that stuck out, I think almost like 2 feet from the curb.
And if the building is recessed, then the sign can project. Could potentially be a larger sign, but still not project. More 4 feet past the property line.
If the building were to articulate inward, then it cannot, encroach more than 4 feet from the building wall.
Regardless.
If it's encroaching into the right of way. So you could keep it not in the right of way at all, but if it's in the right of way, then there's a 4 foot limitation. So if your building's set back more than 4 feet from the right of way, it's not an issue because you're not going to get it into the right of way. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
Say yes.
If it doesn't.
Yeah, it's good. Good.
And
any diagrams?
I can follow up. Yeah.
I can draw it
real quick for you if you wanted to take that.
Well, I think what he maybe, what I was visioning is that building's articulated, but the soffit is straight. So the 4 feet's from the soffit, the nearest point to the curb, not the articulated wall.
I think that would be up to David on how he would interpret what the building wall is, whether that soffit line would be the building wall or whether it would be the actual wall itself.
It depends on the plane of the building wall and its orientation to the property line. There is language that allows architectural projections from a building wall that's not considered the plane of the face of the building. And so each one, it gets looked at individually to determine where that line is.
Yes.
It moves back and forth. There's actually structures on Main Street that are a zero lot line. And there's a couple others like Nedco, I think, which has an ALCO. And there's actually a property line adjustment on that building, a couple others. The property line is actually back inside that, so it's not even consistent down Main Street. And those get taken into account. So
that's curious.
Yeah, I don't know why those changes were made decades ago.
I don't have anything else for the code language.
And because the illumination,
that's not changed. So if you wanted to address sign illumination, and the types of illuminated signs, that would I think Linda would just need more clarity on what you want to see. This isn't the existing code language that's there. Yeah.
We did make a decision to try to keep this as limited as possible to not generate, you know, too much change for folks, since we are going to be doing a lot more code changes and to kind of just really address the pedestrian orientation part, because there's a clear linkage with that and the other work that we're doing.
Do we all feel good about the new changes, the freestanding signs, to make them go a little faster?
No, I love it this way or that way. You have to choose. That was kind of nice. The idea that you can go old school, but if you want to
to a new school, you basically lose all the abilities, all the rights of what you did previously. That's what I liked about when it was explained for the whole exterior pool. So yeah, I'm absolutely satisfied with it.
We have consensus?
No, I'm good.
With the changes as noted?
It's fantastic.
Okay, great. We'll send it out to you after we get that updated.
I saw that, that's probably the most controversial.
It was because of misunderstanding on that, I think.
Because it's expensive. Yeah.
Five of the freestanding, so there's.
Yeah.
Gateway School?
No.
Who else is there?
There was one more item, you guys, I don't know.
The sushi place, last year's Simon Covey, and then the lock safe place still in Pioneer Park. Maybe that's more.
I'm gonna show you this map.
I wasn't hired because of my math skills, so.
We still have this issue of the sign district boundary. So the existing sign district for downtown is this outer limit. This area in the dotted line is the area where the design standards are gonna be applied to, that you are, all are gonna be working on next meeting. It goes like this, and that's the downtown mixed use nodal development area where things are supposed to be pedestrian oriented. So what do you notice is that this South A property is not included, so that seems to be a problem. And we think it's better to have one boundary for the downtown sign district, but you know, the larger boundary does include more property that's not in the pedestrian nodal area. Especially the blocks between 8th and 10th, and then some of the land up here. There's probably not much about Island Park that's gonna be affected by the sign code.
Well, at least not right now.
So, I don't know, I think, you know, we wanted to get your opinion on if you think we should just utilize this existing downtown sign district boundary and modify it to include this.
Well, that's all.
Or something else.
Because that's all the Boone Kelly buildings there, right?
No, this is the South A vacant land, where you might actually get a development.
Oh, I'm sorry, where's?
It's inevitable that it'll be.
So this is just east of the bus station and that development area.
Oh.
It's inevitable that it'll be.
The Dutch Brothers.
Used in the next 15 to 20 years.
Yeah.
So I feel that needs to be.
The railroad owns it.
Oh, yeah.
They don't.
No, it's private property.
Not property, it's not.
This is private property. Yeah, it's a.
That's true, there's.
Development site.
I think it's on my Kindle, or Kindle owns one or two.
Well, I know they own that, they have had that lot there.
If it's not implemented, it's a nicely huge, beautiful.
The can of worms where the Washburn district kind of weaves in and out of this boundary.
Yeah.
Is there gonna be another overlay for homes?
The Washburn has a historic sign district already that has different standards. And I don't know that you've had, have you had signs where you have these overlapping areas? I think in general, the more restrictive standard would control.
The more.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
And maybe two or three over the years. It's very limited, the signage that occurs within the Washburn.
North A and B and along here, there's a few.
So Linda, there's so much potential that's been discussed before about the South of A property that has so much potential. It's industrial now, but that's where you find the most intrusions on a city entrance. You know, I mean, it's a gateway, and yet you don't have any sign control over it. So that's what I don't understand.
If the downtown sign district expands to pick that up, that means it would be more restrictive sign controls over it, because what you would see would be right across the street, would only be allowed to have a 12-foot tall sign, and then right on the opposite side, on the industrial zone property, you'd be 20 feet up in the air.
Yeah.
And well, just, I mean, just tilting your head, you'd see a difference. And so by expanding that to cover that stuff south of South A, that would pick up I think what people would view as a logical expansion of that.
It's better to do this than be reactionary.
Consistent both sides of the street.
Because the idea that.
This is where your design standards are applicable, so why would you leave that out of the sign?
So the situation is someone decides that they want to buy that property, want to do an adjustment on it. Knowing that there's already regulations of this kind of code set in, they know what to do for their business instead of us suddenly going, well, we now suddenly want to change this format and have it reactionary. I think we should be kind of envisioning instead of reacting.
How hard is that to bring that in? Boundary.
It's part of, it'd be part of the ordinance with the code language. It would just be updated.
Okay. Doesn't have to go through.
Thank you, Shannon. The sign code, if we keep it not a land use, if the sign decisions aren't land use decisions, then the boundary for where the sign code applies is also not a land use decision, doesn't have to go through that process. But the, so the, it'd be an ordinance to change that.
Yeah, you're not changing the use.
Right.
They could still do.
Make it so.
Industrial.
Make it so.
Make it so.
Yeah, we're not changing the developable area of the lot. We're not changing the uses of the lot. We're just
it's not called a special district yet either. It's a development district, you know, like a node. That would have its own confines and its own code and ordinances.
So the downtown does have a, I mean, there's.
Well, I mean, I'm talking about that particular property south of A.
This property right here is within the, it's within the mixed use.
I'm sorry, did I?
Yeah, it's within mixed use. It's not a special designated zone.
Okay, we're adjourned.
It's just part of the 7:10 PM.